What's up, gentlemen? This is Rising Phoenix Podcast, a podcast about how to rise up after your divorce. I'm your host, divorce coach, Michael Rhodes. Let's get into it. Joining me today is Dr. Stephen Hayes. Stephen, let's just jump right into it. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm a clinical psychologist and a cognitive researcher, and I've spent 40 years trying to figure out how to hack the human mind. I've been trying to get it down to the smallest set of things that do the most good in the most areas. And it'll sound like self-praise, but I think in terms of the evidence-based wing, the wing that really tries to do it in a science way, I'm arguably able to say that I have the smallest set that do the most things and can prove that. That will uplift you in just about anywhere you want to go. I mean, anywhere that the human mind goes, that's what I'm interested in. And I try to do things that I only find to be personally true for me too. And so I try not to just blab from top of mountain, but, you know, speak from the valleys and pits that we have all been in. And I hope I can serve the folks who listen to you.
Yeah, I am sure of it. Before we started, you had mentioned that you've been through a divorce yourself. So before we get into the larger topic at hand, that larger topic, was that were you compelled or propelled to explore some of what you have because of your divorces?
Well, I think it was context. I mean, I developed a panic disorder early on in my career as a clinical psychologist, and it was just a gut punch. And I spun down into 3 years of that. And, you know, that was happening actually shortly after I separated from my and then divorced my first wife. And so I think it probably was context for it. And I didn't handle that divorce very well. I haven't been through a divorce. I've been through two. Yeah. Second one, I did a heck of a lot better. Maybe learning some of the things that, or trying to deploy some of the things that I had learned. Mm-hmm. But I think the places where we really struggle are kind of similar. There's certain things that you can do that don't work. Well, I usually say it, there's only so many ways to get messed up. And the good news is that there's only so many ways to really lift yourself up, and you might as well get learning them because you're going to need them later, and it's a small set, and it'll be useful when you are walking through a divorce, but also when you're facing a cancer diagnosis, or you know, somebody close to you has died, or you know, you develop some kind of mental health problem, or you've had some failure in business, and on and on it goes. You know, we got to be resilient, and how do we learn how to be resilient? We don't come with an owner's manual, so we got to figure it out. And science can help.
Yeah. Well, you're right. I think that the things that you can learn, or the things that maybe you really kind of need during the divorce process, can be applied to life in general, for sure. I can speak to that all day long. And I think I'm very tempted to dive into the rabbit hole of your divorces and how you handle them, but that's probably a different episode for a different time. Let's dive into what you're sort of, I guess, known for, right, is acceptance and commitment therapy. What is that? And yeah, just talk a little bit about that for us.
Yeah, it's called ACT, acceptance and commitment therapy, or sometimes called acceptance and commitment training when they're using it in businesses or in sports or other kinds of things. But you can summarize it in a not too long paragraph. I'll say it the simplest way and then unpack it. If you want to prosper, you need to learn to be more open, more aware, and more actively engaged in a meaningful life. And you have to extend that kind of flexibility and openness to your relationships. And you got to take care of your body using some of those same skills. That's it. And what I just said will summarize almost everything we know about how change happens in almost every psychotherapy that's ever been assessed when they really try to answer the why question. Often shrinks just try to say, hey, is this helpful? Yeah, well, that doesn't tell you why. But if you dig into why, learning to be more open, aware, and actively engaged in a values-based life, extending that to your relationships and taking care of your body. Put a period on it, learn those skills. You'll handle these challenges, including if it was your mate's idea to dump you, or if it was your idea to do something hard, but not just that. I think you're right. You know, you learn a lot And it seems invalidating to say it when you're in the middle of it, but later on you look back and some of the things you'll learn, you'll say, boy, that was a hard way to learn, and boy, I'm glad I learned it.
Man, you hit it on the head. That invalidation piece is something that I sometimes struggle with in terms of messaging, because the me, so it's been 4.5 years since she left for me. Divorce was only a year ago, roughly, because it took forever. But in the beginning, if someone would have said to me, "This is going to be really great for you," I probably would have wanted to punch them in their face, to be quite
Absolutely.
honest with you. But 4.5 years out, the things that I've gained and learned, listen, I still have struggles and there's still difficulties, but the things that I've gained and learned are invaluable in some ways. So
Well, you know, there's a way
they're
to say that that's not invalidating. Just ask somebody to look back in your life at the most important events that in the long run you said, boy, that really was a meaningful event, and they're not going to be all Candyland. I guarantee you're going to think of losses, deaths, failures, things that were hard, because that's part of what helps us learn how to be resilient. So if you're in the middle of it, it's not the time to say it, but keep the faith, one foot in front of the other, keep your eyes wide, try to learn. And on the other side, we'll see. But meanwhile, look back at your history in other areas, challenges met, skills learned.
No, it's true. It causes me to pause and think about some of my challenges in my life, and yeah, the challenges is the word. So with ACT, right, my understanding is there are six core processes that fall under the banner of ACT. Can you cover each one of those?
Yeah, and by process, all we mean is like a parade or procession, just a sequence of things you do, the
Okay.
steps you take.
Gotcha.
And I said open, aware, and active. That's settling the six down to the three. Well, the two opening ones are learn to be more emotionally open and not clinging on emotions either. Don't avoid them, don't cling to them, let them do what they're there to do. They ebb and flow to help orient you towards the parts of your past that are relevant to the present. So you can learn from your experiences. Hey, I feel something's off here. I'm a little afraid now. That's helpful. It's a good guide. Do the same thing with your thoughts and your memories and your sensations. So do it in cognitively too. Allow yourself to think many things. If you think any just one thing really strong, your mind will say, yeah, but that's not quite so. I mean, if you start thinking, oh, I'm the best, you say, no, you're not really there. Or I'm the worst, you're not that. So even little kids understand, you know, Goofy with horns on one sh shoulder and Goofy with a halo on the other. That's never going to stop. The argument in your head will never stop. But learn to be more flexible and take what's useful and leave the rest. So that's the open process, cognitively and emotionally flexible. Then there's the aware process. Well, that's being able to attend to what's important. What that means is letting go of things that are not important, but not suppressively, not like, is it gone yet? Is it gone yet? Is it gone yet? Because every time you ask that question, you just looked, and guess what? It's back. So, no, more like what you do when you just allow yourself to become curious and interested about things that are important. You're not trying to get away from anything. You're just trying to allow yourself to enjoy that movie, enjoy that book, enjoy that basketball game, whatever you're doing, do that in your life, enjoying and focusing on what's important, and do it from this more spiritual part of you. This is the hardest part to talk about, but everybody understands it. It's the part of you that is the deepest part of you, the thread on which all of this has been put. When you think back of what your life and you're for, you can remember being there. And man, every cell in your body is different. Everything is different. Yeah, but there's a part of you that's the same, that conscious noticing part of you. From there, you can walk through hell and you can learn. And you know, it's what our religious and spiritual traditions are trying to orient us towards. However you get there to a part that's bigger than just this moment, this deeper sense of self. That's the awareness part. And then the engagement part, well, what do you want to be about in your life? What do you want to manifest in your behavior? And how can you create habits around that? So commitments to creating habits that are values-based. And if you want to find your values, it's not that hard. Flip your pain over and you'll know what you care about. Find the sweet moments in your life. You'll know what you care about. Remind yourself of the heroes you have and what you looked up to, and you know what you care about. And so, yeah, open, aware, and active, but there's actually six things. But turns out there's actually only one thing. All of those collapse into learning to be more psychologically flexible. and then scaling that to relationships in your body. So that's the word for the whole set, but it's a simple set and it can be learned. And when it's learned, life lifts up instead of down. And there's thousands of studies that prove it. So look, life's going to ask you to learn it. Might as well get about business learning it on purpose. And you can do it even without a big challenge like divorce. You could do it just deliberately and learn those skills. You could do it just for a positive goal. I want to run a marathon. It'll be the same thing. I want to have my business succeed. It's going to be the same thing. I want to learn how to be more intimate and trusting in my relationships. It'll be the same thing. So that's the smallest set that does the most good. And those are the six things.
So I just out of curiosity, so a couple things that have come up during my time doing this podcast that seem to come up, and one of them a lot more lately. It's I find it funny that I've interviewed a lot of psychologists who have a bit of a negative view towards standard psycho talk therapy. What's your take on standard regular Freudian type of therapy?
Well, it depends on who you get. I mean, if you have somebody there who's listening and caring, think about it. One way to think about it this way. You think about somebody who's lifted you up in your life, just anybody. Now, if I say, okay, and with this person, whether they seem like they're really with you or they're looking at their watch, and when your eyes met, were there two human beings in the room, and were they able to sort of be with you through hard times without a whole lot of judgment? Are they constantly throwing judgment out here? Is that, and are they asking you to, be different in order to be able to interact with you? Or are they taking you for who you really are? Could you be, could, would they ask you to value, violate your values? Or would they never put you in that position? And could you be in the together in ways that fit the opportunities of the situation that are flexible? The six processes I just put into questions. So here's what I'm saying. A healthy therapeutic relationship, regardless of the blah, blah, blah theory, models psychological flexibility. And if you internalize it and take it home, you're not going to marry your therapist, you're not going to move in with them. But if you can internalize it and take it home, you're now doing what I'm talking about. But there's a whole lot of schools of therapy that'll yada, yada, yada forever about stuff that turns out to be not that important. So you do want approaches to therapy that are based on evidence, but also take you as an individual seriously. You don't want to say, oh, I've got this validated thing. This is what you get. And if you had a cancer diagnosis, yeah, you know what the standard thing is for everybody. But if you're really into what is going on in medicine, you're probably going to the best center you can find. Could you actually do like an analysis of the tumor and figure out what the very best treatment is for me, as opposed to one size fits all, something you can Google on the internet? It's the same thing with therapy, is that there are therapies that are farther ahead in learning exactly how to fit what we know to you. And so not everything's the same and not everything's helpful. And there's a lot of goofy stuff out there. And then there's a lot of bad therapists out there. That's true too. What I usually say to people is by session two or three, you're not clicking and feeling lifted up. You're not connected and feeling understood. You don't feel as though what's being said really fits you. Find another therapist.
I agree. I liken it to dating, right? It's that you don't have to pick the first one.
Exactly.
You got to be very, you can, you're allowed to be picky. It's your money, it's your insurance, whatever. And I think some folks will have a bad experience with one and be like, oh, that's it. Like, I'm never going to therapy. It doesn't work. And I think that's, I guess it goes back to your point of like being open, being flexible, right?
Yeah. And you are talking to a geek here. And so, and I do think, I mean, if you, science has been a pretty cool filter for a lot of cool things. You
For sure.
probably wouldn't do a surgery that had never been tried before, that had never been tested with others. I mean, you probably wouldn't. You probably wouldn't take meds that had never been tested.
True.
Well, you don't want to do that with psychotherapy either. So take the time to learn. And the two things you want to know, is there evidence that it works? Well, three things. Do they know why? And do they know how to fit it to me and my problems? If the answer is yes on those three, and that gets down smaller. And you can get a real human being in the world, in the room, who will do the things I just mentioned, which frankly, almost anybody, I mean, your grandma could be awfully helpful to you when she was there, not judging you, accepting you for who you are, being present with you, and not violating your values, showing a good model for you. So trust that part. And actually demand that part. Don't get in there with a therapist, even if they know all the science in the world and they're judging you and making you feel small. Man, just say goodbye and find one that won't do that to you.
Amen. I want to go back to the act and ask you what. I'm sure you've coached a lot of people or worked with a lot of people with this. What's the most difficult of the steps or the processes for people to sort of be consistent with?
Yeah, and that's why every individual matters, because it really is a mixed set and you need all of them put together to really work. The way I explain it, it's like having sides of a box. There's six sides to a box. What if you pulled a couple sides out and they weren't there at all? It's not a box anymore. You better not stand on it or try to put anything in it. It's going to flop all around. And in the same way, if you can't build that whole set, you're weak in what it's really trying to do. Now, no one's perfect, and it does, you don't have to be, but you want to work on all of them. But I think that the ones it varies, but very often people have a hard time getting out of judgment of themselves and others, and noticing that their mind is talking to them, and there's more to you than just the chatterbox between your ears. That's a big one, because it's so dominant and so overfed. Didn't used to be like that, and some of our cultural traditions that have weakened. I'll give you an example. Just being part of church services and things like that, where things like contemplation, prayer, meditation, all that kind of stuff has massively weakened. And so sometimes people are looking to shrinks to do stuff that maybe you would get more in your spiritual traditions. And what would it do? It would probably connect you to that deeper sense of self. It would probably help you focus on your values. And at their best, it'd probably help you let go of the past, come into the present, things like confession and forgiveness and, trusting now you can't tell somebody, go find a religion to, now that's up to the individual. But the core processes, I think, we've got to put into our hearts and our heads and our hands. So I would say, backing up and noticing your thoughts without simply having them dominate you over you is the single hardest. Second one, I would think, is probably emotional flexibility. And it's because of the first one. Feelings only work when they can go up and down. They're like a warning light on the dashboard of your car. And when you start judging, you start saying, I only want the positive emotions. Well, dude, there is an emotion you can name that you don't, number one, pay for. You go to horror movies, you read tear jerkers. I mean, come on, admit it. You pay for every single emotion you can think of. And two, benefit from. Think of the situations where you need that emotion. But then you get to number three. The mind is so stupid, it'll say, I only want the good ones. And so if I say happy, you'll say good. If I say sad, you'll say bad. Well, the problem-solving mind tries to get rid of the bad. Well, how about the sadness of walking through a divorce? You may take a look at that and say, no, I just can't do it. I'm not going to do it. I can't do it. And dude, you need to do it. You need to do it. Your mental health requires it. This is my first marriage, where years went by and I'm thinking, I just can't do it. I cannot do it. I can't, I'll just die. I'll fall apart. I did, And looking back, I can have compassion towards that younger me. But also, if I wouldn't meet him, I'd probably get in front of him and say, dude, you can do this. Sadness will not kill you. Trying to be a pretzel to avoid that will come damn close to killing you. So there's an example of what I call emotional avoidance. For the signal light on the car to work, you have to be able to see it. And so that has to be open to it. But you also can't cling to it. If you get a positive light, you don't go like, oh, I got it. I don't want to ever let go of it. Oh, I'm so happy. Oh, yeah. No, if you cling to happiness, it's not happy. And if you want an example of that, put enough drugs in your body and you'll be happy, or some, variant of it, but it'll ruin your life. And so, heroin addicts don't live very good lives. They just don't. They die early, the relationships fall apart. But they have a little, whole lot of what feels happy because they've fixed it in place. You even call that a fix, which means both repair and hold it in place. Emotions shouldn't be held in place. Let them ebb and flow, ride with them, focus on what's important, get your feet moving in that direction, and have faith in yourself. The self faith of, con with fidence, the Latin word for faith, the confidence that you are okay as a whole human being and your core interests matter and are worthy of your attention.
How much do you think you need to go back and, because I feel like all this, your patterns, your habits, your thoughts, all of it stems from your childhood, right? I mean, it all comes from there. So how much do you have to go back and dig some of that stuff up and heal from it? Or are you more of a cognitive sort of approach and just sort of fix whatever the fuck that means, fix things going forward? You know what I'm saying? Where do you kind of fall on that spectrum?
I think you need to be open to the past, but not wallowing in it. And frankly, I would rather allow the past to show up in the present because that's the part of the past that matters. And so if you're more open, you will sense, oh, golly, I'm feeling something. What is it? And then you go, oh, man, that was the last relationship. Or my dad, I remember when he did that and I held it hidden in the basement because I thought it'll come up naturally. And if you want to do it past first, if you really want to go through the entrails and the old tea leaves or every little thing, whatever, it's fine. It's slower and it's
Sure.
easy to get lost. You already lived that in slow motion. Going back and reliving the whole thing is going to take a lot of time. And most of us have lives to live and we want only the parts of the past that are in the present. So I'm more a present-focused person, but who's consciously open to the past and willing to go there when it echoes into the present. And if you get more sensitive, if you get the gloves off your hand, you get your feelers out, you stop running away from your emotions, entangled with your thoughts, lost in the past and future, you come into the present moment consciously, take those gloves off, and feel what's on the table in front of you. Some of what's there is old. And I often tell you to tell people, how do you know that you're in something where it's probably a negative loop? How old does this feel? And if you're into a situation where shit, this feels old, it's time to take a new direction, something that's truly new, because your mind will say, well, at least I survived it. So it'll want you to do something that is old, familiar, and worthless over something that's new, unfamiliar, feels risky, but might work. You just, that phrase, can't teach old dogs new tricks.
Sure.
If you've noticed over time, sometimes it gets harder, not easier, to try new things.
Sure.
Well, you'd think it'd be the opposite. What have you got to lose? I mean, when you're a kid, you could humiliate yourself. An adult, you're with, usually now, you're not hanging out with just anybody. You're hanging out with your friends. You're not just living anywhere. You're living more or less where you want to live, et cetera. Yeah. Why is it harder? Because it has a history, and part of you thinks it's safer to be stuck than it is to really learn the new things that life's asking you to learn.
Those struggles that you see and that we have, do you see a split? Because this is for men. I know I do have some female listeners, but it's obviously it's for men. Do you see sort of a split in a difference between what women struggle with and what men struggle with, or is it just a
Yeah.
human thing? Okay,
Big.
awesome.
There's a big time difference. There's an old experiment that's been replicated, and I love it. And it sort of teaches you, it makes you almost a little sad to see it. And we're trying to walk out of it culturally. But you take a baby, dress it up in blue stuff clothes, or dress it up in pink clothes, same baby. Now just have it hang out in a room with some adults, males and females. The pink babies, when something happens and they cry, they get picked up, soothed, and talked to. The blue babies get ignored and they're not picked up. The pink babies can't crawl as far away without the adults pulling them back. Blue babies are allowed to crawl farther away. So it ain't very long. I mean, I know it's changing in the culture, but stop crying. I'll give you something to cry about, or
Heard that
boy,
one many, many, many times.
big boys don't cry and all that kind of stuff. And if it isn't your parents, it's probably your peers. And you look at, they're not crying. You look at these big giants, they're not crying. My dad wasn't crying. It wasn't until later on I figured out that he was taking tranquilizers and had an alcohol problem. No wonder he was crying. The dude was, three sheets to the wind most days. I didn't know it. I didn't know it till much, much later, but he looked so mellow. He wasn't mellow. And so what males tend to struggle with the most is emotional openness. And then behind that, there's a kind of a sense of self where we're tagged with being providers, being the warriors, being the tough ones, being the soldiers, being the, and you look at what it takes to play football or to, be out there in the swamp, as a soldier, or, be a fireman or whatever. And some of those archetype male kinds of things, most folks without training do the logical, reasonable, and stupid thing, which is, in order to behave at a high level of performance in these stressful situations, I'm just going to massively suppress. I'm going to deny. I'm going to look the other way. I'm just going to push all the emotions out. Okay, that actually is wise. Sometimes you're a first responder. Now's not the time to cry. You don't know how to go home and start feeling some of the pain of seeing people die who are saying, "Help me," and you triaged them, and "I can't help you, but I can help this person, and they might survive." You are going to die. I'm not, if you're, I'm thinking like an ambulance driver, for example, or a soldier, or something like that, or a medic. Yeah, man, is that hard? But if you go home and you don't know how to then open to that, you're hammering down martinis and you're, swiping, taking a swipe at your dog or your mate. So, I think we need training. Men need training on emotional openness, and in the kind of flexibility around sense of self that redefines what masculine means. That, yeah, persistence, values, being there for others, absolutely. But I look at things like, the NFL game or the on the back of the helmets it says "Be love." I know some people are probably going, "Ah, me," I go like, "Boy, I wish I had had that when I was a kid." That my ball player heroes and so forth that I looked up to were saying things like, "Yeah, sometimes I hurt too, and it's okay, and you can still be strong and be a man and not be a wimp, even though things are emotionally hard sometimes. It's not easy to be human." And there's whole efforts around that, and I'm involved with that with sports figures and others of helping to create a culture of more emotional openness for men.
So I that's a good question. Is a couple things that came up. One, is that a skill that you can learn that put it on a shelf and pull it out later? In other words, you just had a shitty moment, but you can't cry right then and there, and but you got to do it later. How do you develop that skill is the first thing. And then in general for men, what is the okay, they're not emotionally open. How do we get them to be that other than telling them, hey man, just be more emotionally open? Like what again is the
Well, just tell
mechanism?
it. If you just say it as a sentence, you might as well just, spit in the wind or something. That's not going to go anywhere. But no, I think, some of the stuff that's coming into our culture, for example, mindfulness work, being able to direct your attention, which is the core of mindfulness, that, if you're just watching your breath and your mind goes off, you come back, you watch your breath. Okay, why would you do such a stupid thing? Because you need to train your attention. And that's not sissy, weird stuff. You need that. If you're a cop, what are you attending to? You want your sometimes your attention to be broad, you sometimes want it to be narrow, you sometimes want it to be fixed, you sometimes want it to shift. So if you can't shift, stay broaden and narrow, then you don't have a tool that you need. And that's true whether or not you're hitting a baseball or talking to a friend. Well, you start doing that with your own life, then you start seeing things. There's a skill that you can learn. Heck, you can learn it sitting on a chair that you can apply to, okay, I'm now right in the middle of a fight with somebody I love, or I'm about to face a customer who's mad at me or whatever the thing is, and be able to apply shift, stay, broaden, and narrow skills. You can do the same thing emotionally. And some of what I would focus on there is, what is your body doing right now? Skilled people can sense their body. When you're working on your balance, you're working on your strength, you're working on your flexibility. There's a reason why athletics and so forth is so important to us. I think it's a metaphor. And that game of life is like the games that we play without any training. We didn't have to be told to. If you were 3 years old, you're playing games with your siblings. I can get to that tree before you touch me. Ha ha ha. And you would give it every ounce of effort. Well, how about playing the game of being more emotionally open? And out of that, being a better father, or being a better husband, or being a better business owner, or being a better employee, or you can play that game. And emotional openness will help you. Attentional flexibility will help you. Cognitive flexibility will help you. So, my answer in a technical way to that would be things like my self-help books. I had the joy of writing a self-help book that beat Harry Potter for a full week. On
Nice.
Amazon. So I've had my 15 minutes of fame called Get
Awesome.
Out of Your Mind Into Your Life. It was written up in Time magazine in a 5-page story with a 2-page spread of my big fat face. And I sent it to my mama. So,
Nice. Well, congrats on that.
yeah, that was fun. That was my 5 minutes of fame. But, and the reason was there is people were gobsmacked over what I'm saying right now when they started applying it. We've now tested. Just that book called Get Out of Your Mind Into Your Life. I'm not trying to sell books. There's a whole bunch out there
Oh,
now
good. Yeah.
following my methods, hundreds of them following my methods. So you can look for ACT or psychological flexibility, the name for the processes. But if you want mine, Get Out of Your Mind Into Your Life is not bad as a place to start. And there's another book called Liberated Mind that walks through the science of it. Well, they will show you exercise after exercise after exercise that you can do to learn. And just minutes ago, I was down at in the gym working with my coach, and I go down there a couple times a week and doing the weirdest damn exercises that you'd ever seen. But then I can look at my muscle differentiation and my flexibility, and I can say, yeah, I can actually do that in a way that I couldn't do it 6 months ago. And I can see muscle definition that I didn't have, and I have strength I didn't have, and I got flex. Same thing. You wouldn't work on strength, flexibility, endurance only when you got sick. And then expect that that's going to be a good health practice. You go down to the gym. Well, where's the mental gym? You're going to have to create it. You have to do it on purpose yourself, because nobody's going to demand it. And you can do that in therapy, but you can do that just with good reading or YouTube. And you don't have to even spend any money. I mean, my methods, the World Health Organization, the single, can I brag, do a little self-brag? The
Absolutely.
single most downloaded document in the entire World Health Organization website is a book on psychological flexibility and ACT called Doing What Matters in Time of Stress. I'll give you the bit.ly link and you can put it in the comments area. And if
Absolutely.
it's a free book and it has 23 different languages, and it's right now in the Ukraine, it's in Turkey, it's in South Sudan, because it's being deployed for all the war zones around the world, because it's been shown to be helpful with people who've lost everything or are facing death and so forth. And if it can be useful there, it could be useful for you too. So you don't have to spend a nickel to get some of the training that we know is the kind of training that is the sort of mental gym for the small set of processes life's asking you to learn.
Yeah, it sure feels like we all need it. I mean, especially those of us that are going through a divorce. But I think in general, is there, I get the sense, and I think I've seen these headlines, and I'm not much of a headline guy in terms of the, most of the time they're written to make you want to read, but they're not written backed up with any substance. But do you think that that we're facing a mental health crisis in America and in the world at large?
Yeah, we are, and especially among young people. And it's for two reasons. One is the world is getting harder, not easier, in every area that has to do with mental health, but it's getting easier in every other area. I mean, you're living longer, you're less likely to have a disease, you're less likely to be the victim of violence, on and on it goes. We've done better on every single metric that you can think of. If you had to pick a time to be born, you couldn't pick where, pick right now. Yeah, but not in terms of your mental and behavioral health. Why? The biggest challenge of mental and behavioral health, the single biggest one, is exposure to pain, judgment, and comparison and the encouragement of avoidance. And we're doing all those things. So we do it with our TikTok pages and our social media. And how? Well, kids are out there comparing their insides to other people's outsides. And guess what? When you do that, everybody else looks better than you. And so we've created a culture that's full of constant judgment. I mean, newscasts, you didn't used to be that. You pick left or right news, and it's nothing but judgment, 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 judgment. You know, bad news sells. You're constantly being exposed to painful things. If some poor person throws her family off over a bridge, you could within minutes you can see it on your iPhone. You know, so your kids see more pain and experience more judgment than your grandfather did in their whole damn life. But by the time they're leaving home, I mean, we've done the math on this. It's actually literally true. It's literally true. And so, how are you gonna have modern minds for that kind of world? Well, you're gonna have to create them deliberately. But our culture can't evolve that fast. So you have to do it. You have to figure out how to put it in your heart and head and hands, and then put it in your family. And what I'm telling you here in terms of open, aware, and actively engaged, scale it to your relationships, take care of your body. That will account for 98% of everything we know from all the different psychotherapies in the world, because I've done the study. I actually looked at every single study in the history of the world that ever asked the why question within a statistically proper way, which is very geeky. I won't explain. It's called mediational analysis. We looked at 55,000 studies. It took us 3 years to do it, 50 people. We read them both twice. We scored them. And if you just look at the ones that have been replicated, shown to be true at least twice, what I just said to you, learn how to be more open, aware, and actively engaged, scaling that to your body and to your relationships, taking care of your body, accounts for 98% of what we know about how change happens. So here's my message to you is it's a harder world for you and your kids and your family. Easier and all the things that dogs and cats care about, harder in at least one last area of our mental and behavioral health. And we're seeing it politically, we're seeing it socially. It's a scary world out there now. And after COVID, oh my God, does anybody not know that you need mental resilience? Does anybody not have a family that was punched in the gut one way or the other by that 2 years of horror? So the system's overwhelmed. Our mental health is going in the wrong direction. But I don't think it helps to just think mental health sometimes pulls over into I have anxiety, I have depression. Think about it, about what you know how to do. The problem is that we're now actively encouraging things that are not helpful in giving you the mental resilience to be able to step up to the challenges of your life and your behavioral health challenges and the social challenges. So I think we have an alternative, though, and science can help. And that's why I'm out talking to you.
If you had a magic wand, and if you did, could you loan it to me? If you had one, would you get rid of social media?
Oh God, you know, I would say no, but here's why. It is such a powerful source for good when it's doing good.
True.
You know, and in the history of the world, whenever shifts like this have happened, we've had major dysregulatory problems. It happened with the printing press, it happened with radio, it happened with TV, it happened to every single one. Computers. Some of us are old enough to remember what that did. And now we're getting to AI. Are you kidding me? When you're not able to distinguish a real film from a made-up film, I mean, we're headed off into a real weird world. And my bit is on humanity, that every time we've made these advances, we've eventually learned how to turn them into something good. And it's scary as heck, but I'm betting on humans. And I'm doing the very best I can with my kids, my work, my family, and with people like yourself. You've got a big amplifier, you've got a voice, you're reaching thousands of people. And so, can we do, if each of us does what we need to do to put into the culture the kinds of things that will be there for your children's children's children, they won't know that you did it, but you will have had a hand in it. And after all that happened before, look at what you and I are doing right now. That couldn't have been done 20 years ago.
True.
How many thousands of people created what is happening right this second? Thousands and thousands and thousands of people to create the infrastructure and the lines and the technology and the science and the machines and just and would you want to say, let's get rid of all podcasts? I'd say, heck no.
Yeah.
What an awesome tool.
True.
People can learn so much from their massage chair. But I am worried
Sure.
about, of course, you can use it for ill,
True.
and that's true. And we are facing that with people, malevolent forces and others that are using it for commercial interests or for political interests or whatever that are not really in your interests. So you better learn how to manage those tools too.
Yeah, amen. I want to shift a little bit back to you in terms of your divorce, and I don't want to dive too deep, but I am curious. What was the one thing that you struggled with the most with the most difficult? Sounds like the first one was more difficult than the second one. What was the one thing that, or a few things, like what were the big struggles for you personally?
I think the first one is that I hadn't learned how to go through the pain of loss. And I kind of understand it. And I've understood it more recently because both of my parents just could not face loss. And some of these things I've learned almost very recently. Like I learned only within the last 5 years that my mother's mother committed suicide and she blamed herself for it. So there were dark secrets in the home, and loss was really scary. And I sort of came out of that not ready to walk through the pain of loss. My dad, as his dad got up, went in to get a sandwich, didn't come back, fell dead on the floor, or in his own aspirations, he wanted to be a professional ball player, was pitching for Duke, signed with the Cincinnati Reds, threw out his arm stupidly, throwing a triple header and club ball. And lived the rest of his life as a ball player tragedy. And would never talk about it. Never talk about it. Yeah. Big boys don't cry. They just get drunk. That's not a good way to go. He
No, that's
actually
not.
said to my mother once that after he had a heart attack, he got so afraid of dying that he said, if I'm gonna die, I'm not gonna die sober. Dude, that's a bad idea. Come
Yeah.
on. And of course, he had to clean that up later on. It created an absolute train wreck for his body, and he died early, died at 61. Anyway, my point being, coming out of that kind of training, I just didn't know how to do it. So I'm in there with a relationship that is really going bad, and it's getting increasingly degrading, and I'm catching notes to the lover, and I'm, oh my God, just a train wreck, And the logical sensible thing to do would be to end the relationship, but I didn't know how. I absolutely did. It was so overwhelming and painful. I thought if I just stuck it out, somehow or another, my faith would pay off. That was not a good idea. The second one is different. I mean, my wife just decided that she had enough and she wanted to go in another direction. And I did something better. I went out, took a walk, kicked the trash cans, came back, looked her in the eye, and said, let's do the best damn divorce that's ever been done. And we worked hard to not bring in the kids, to really divide up things fairly, to express what was hard about it, to go through a process, where who gets the dog and who gets that picture and how does the money get settled, take the perspective. And she's my friend to this day. I got an email from her this morning. And I learned this is another one which I recommend. Don't think that because you have a good divorce, that means you're still married. So, for example, I ain't fixing the toilet. I ain't coming over and, you got a problem, you're going to have to deal with it, dear. We settled the assets. You're an independent person. I'm not checking in. If I see you with a guy on the streets, I'm going to smile and say hi. I am not getting in there like that, this is the end of that, but it doesn't mean that it's the end of our relationship. We've had kids together. That was what the call was about, email was about this morning. My son's coming down to for the UNLV UNR game, and we hope we go Pack. If we win it, we may be in the championship of the Mountain West, and we'll be in the tournament this year. You watch us. But So that's a heck of a lot better than the first round.
Yeah.
Not perfect, not perfect, but man, if I'd done that, if I knew how to do that the first time, I would have saved so much on pain as a way to learn things.
Yeah.
But okay, I can have compassion for myself, given my training, my background, my history, my parents. I needed that pain to learn those hard lessons.
I
I
love that you.
wasn't going to
I
learn them
love.
easy. I was going to learn it out of the book. I had to be punched in the nose. Okay. I wish I had learned it more easily in a way, but I learned
Sure.
it.
I love that you say you're training. Like that's an interesting way to say that you didn't get what you needed in childhood or whatever. I've never heard it phrased like that, but I love it. That's because it is training, right? It's your training for adulthood, right? And
Exactly.
yeah, that's awesome. I like that. Well, like I said, I think I could talk to you for quite a long time about your experiences, but we'll have to do that for another time. So I'm going to move ahead to the last question that I asked everybody, which is, what words of wisdom would you impart to a man who is just beginning his divorce process?
Oh, well, I've had to do this several times with my friends and so forth. And having been through it, they sometimes come to me and seek out that kind of advice. And plus, they know I'm a shrink and they look for it. And I say, one, give yourself time. Take the time to be open. Keep your eyes wide. There's a lot to learn here. Expect it to be hard at times. Expect it to be painful at times. Those times are times when you want your eyes wide. There's things to learn right in those moments, such as shutting down, closing your eyes, clenching your fists, won't allow you to. And keep the faith in yourself that, your needs, your feelings, your history, you're a whole valid person. You belong here. And that part of you that says, oh, you'll never, ever, ever have another relationship or be able to put that behind you, or that's just your mind talking. We don't know what the future, but keep the faith with yourself, because that faith in yourself is the biggest thing you've got. And then try to do it in a way that when you look back, at least you can say, I did it in a values-based way. I never betrayed the person that I want to be in walking through this. It doesn't mean that I'm perfect, but I tried to be my best self in walking through this. And when I was tempted just to, tell her to F off or to, show her by doing this thing, you're gonna hurt me, I'm gonna hurt you, or whatever. And wait, no, wait, 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 no, don't do that. Because it's really not what you want to do. It's just the final one is on the other side. Give yourself time. And I usually actually say, set a stopwatch and don't do any dating for a year.
Yeah, agreed.
Just do not rebound out, because your mind's going to say, oh, if I don't quickly find someone else, I'm going to. No, dude. You can learn some cool things just sleeping by yourself. You can learn some cool things just taking care of your own needs and having your apartment. Probably not the big fancy house, you probably lost that. But having your apartment or whatever made up the way you like it, or going to the games you want to go to, or making the taking time with your friends, or taking time in the gym, or and I followed that actually in my second divorce, and I literally on day 367 went out for a date, and it was with my now wife, and I've been married for 20 years, very
Wow.
happily, I would have to say. So, those are the rules that I would say. It's a little more words than you probably would hope for, but I hope it's good guidance.
Oh, absolutely. No, I'll take any, especially like I said in the beginning before we started, like someone that has been through it and has lived it has a lot more credibility. I mean, that's why I think I have credibility to these guys is because I've been where they've been. You know, I've felt what they've felt. And so when someone else is able to speak to this and speak to it from experience, that goes a lot further and carries a lot more weight than just someone who's been trained on how the brain works. That shit's important, don't get me wrong, but if you haven't been through it, you just don't have a clue. So, how can
Yeah,
people
I
fought
agree.
fought
And I do want to say there's data out there that for men, This is one of the biggest challenges you'll ever face in your life. And for your health, one of the most important. So that, if you mess this one up, if you really, this is can have serious consequences, literally to things like how long a life you live. That's, isn't that crazy?
That
You
is.
know, you pick other things where, we're the social primates, and it's hard to break up. It's really, really hard. And especially since we're kind of trained to be dumb because we're the blue babies who just kind of explore and cry and nobody picks us up. So we're kind of stupid some ways about our own emotions and being
For
able to
sure.
name them, observe them, know what they are, use them, not have them use you, and so forth.
Yeah.
So it's important. It's worth your attention. And if you feel like you're not up to this situation, well, you didn't come with a rule book, and who would be up to this situation? You're learning something that's hard and new.
True.
Even if you've been through it before, it's going to be new because there's new things to learn. So,
Yeah.
time's up. Time to learn those things. Breathe in, breathe out. And I hope the things I said there about where to orient to learn is kind of a little useful guide, but it won't have escaped your attention. I took those six flexibility processes and I put them into divorce-related things, and there's actually data on do people have good relationships on the other side of divorce and go through divorce in a psychologically healthy way? And the answer is yes, if they can be more psychologically flexible and resilient during the process. So I've given you a secret decoder ring about some good things to do that the science says will be helpful too.
Well, speaking of that, what's the best way for people to find you and your books and all that you have done and are continuing to do?
Easy peasy. I mean, if you want to follow me, you can go to my website, stephenchayes.com. Stephen with a V, middle initial C. My dad's name is Charlie, Hayes. But as I already oriented you towards just the terms to search for in Google, including really free, nice books and things like that that are out there on the internet. You'll find them really, really easily. And on all those Facebooks and all that, there'll be little groups and things. I haven't looked specifically for men who are going through a divorce, but I would pretty much bet that there are some that are oriented towards mindfulness, acceptance, and values. That's the way it's talked about sometimes, or psychological flexibility, or maybe even acceptance and commitment therapy or training ACT. But all of those things, as far as books, all of the ones out there, Amazon's and so forth. I would say one thing, though, be a little careful for the counterfeit books because they've become so popular. In the last 40 years, ACT has had something like 1,100 randomized trials. It's the most researched new method in the last 40 years in psychotherapy. Well, because of that, there's scammers out there that are doing these El cheapo things where they strip the internet and create a book, and Amazon won't take them down because they're making money selling them. So make sure that you've got a real person who has a real website, who really was a professor or a researcher or a credible clinician, and not some made-up name out of some Middle Eastern country that's selling crap and trying to make money off your suffering.
Gotcha. Well, Stephen, thank you so much for doing this. I really, really appreciate it. We will definitely stay in touch and have you back on so we can talk about, your a more personal view of what you've been through. But thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Awesome, and thanks for the opportunity to share with others. Peace, love, and life to all. And the men out there who are going through it, I can just say, been there, done that. I'm with you. And there is a place on the other side of this where things will open up and reform. You do it right, it'll be a good place.
Awesome. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for watching and or listening. Since my separation in July of 2019, I have done an incredible amount of work on myself. I've had many different therapists, life coaches, and went through different programs. I've taken all that I've learned and put it into my own program called Forged by Fire. If you are interested in having me help you navigate your divorce, please hit my website, risingphoenixdivorcecoach.com. I look forward to working with you.